Welcome to part two of a two-part audio and video podcast with Clark Datchler of Johnny Hates Jazz. It's brought to you by Make a Difference with Records in conjunction with The Creative Well. Make a Difference with Records is a second-hand record store based in Godalming, Surrey, which donates all its proceeds to the Surrey mental health charity Catalyst. The Creative Well provides professional services supporting the mental health and well-being of those involved in the music industry. For more details of our charitable work, follow us on Instagram under Make a Difference with Records, where you can also find updates on new stock and future podcasts. So welcome to part two of That's My Vinyl Answer. I'm Anthony from Make a Difference with Records, and with me is Nadine Page from The Creative Well. We're here today with Clark Datchler of Johnny Hates Jazz. Clark, thanks for sticking around for part two. Before we get into it and the set questions, increasingly these days, vinyl's made a big comeback. Most of the stuff we sell from our charity store is vinyl, but increasingly CDs seem to be coming with a bit of resurgence. From a kind of a personal point of view and or a recording point of view, what's your thought on the two media? What's your kind of preference?
Well, in some ways, I wish my colleague in Johnny Hates Jazz, Mike, was here, Mike Nocito, because Mike is a fabulous engineer and producer and has many comments about this, because he's worked in the past with some incredible people from Sting to Pink Floyd and The Cure, Thompson Twins. And Mike makes the point that not every album sounded better on vinyl. That the mastering process sometimes worked, sometimes didn't. Mm-hmm. And even with the best of the mastering engineers, there was a degree of hit and miss about it. You know, you finish a record in the studio, you spend months on it, and you've got it just as you want. And then when it has to go to vinyl, there's a whole other process involved. You know, mastering for vinyl was, and I know there are still some people who still specialise in it, but not as many, a science in and of itself, very difficult one. Then, of course, CDs came along, the indestructible CD, which seemed to destruct very quickly.
Yes.
And that brought another set of challenges, because obviously when mastering to vinyl worked, it could be stupendous. Mm-hmm. And you lost that with CDs. It was a mastering process still, but obviously at the beginning of CDs, there was not the understanding that things were going to sound less warm, potentially a little more clinical. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, there was a certain flatness to CDs earlier on. But I think as people understood what the issues were, it's like recording now. The more people understand the issues of recording within computers alone, the more you're seeing plugins that are there to model analog equipment. Is it exactly the same? No. Is it better? Yes. So in terms of my own preference, obviously vinyl gives you this wonderful artwork, which I miss greatly. And I think that is one of the biggest selling factors to vinyl. And I say that as an artist, because it's thrilling to see what a graphic designer comes back with and how they've interpreted what you've done. And I remember when I first saw one of my own CDs, it was like, you know, you open up the booklet, I can barely read this. and again, people have tried to take care of that more and more. But that said, I have to say I'm impressed by how many people seem to still want CDs. And what you've just said, Anthony, is interesting, that there seems to be a resurgence. I get that feeling. Mm-hmm. And maybe you have the experience to back that up. My experience is maybe selling CDs on tour, and people do really want them still. Mm-hmm. And there is something lovely about a CD collection, you know, as there is a vinyl collection. And I kind of think they can exist side by side, and they're really valid.
Yeah.
And let's face it, in a world where physicalized music seems to be giving way to more and more streamed music, it, mm-hmm. don't you just miss it, the physicalized music? Yeah. So I think that's part of it. People, young people as well, mm-hmm. are thinking, no, I want this vinyl. I want to have this tangible piece of music,
yeah.
in this tangible art in my life. And I love that. I love that.
I completely agree. To have that tangible music in your hand, there's nothing like it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what was your first album, Clark, that you ever bought? And do you still have it?
I don't still have it. The first album that I bought on my own was an ABBA album. And I took a lot of shtick when I was younger for being into ABBA, because music was, and I think it still is, very tribal. The fans can be very tribal. You're into this genre or that genre. You can't like ABBA and also like the Brothers Johnson. Well, I like both. You know, it was all music to me. I didn't care. I mean, I had my limits, don't get me wrong. But I'll say no more about that.
It sounds like a Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yes. Although better put with Clint Eastwood. So to be honest, I bought a group of ABBA albums. But it was the album that had SOS on it that really did it for me. I really like SOS. I think it's a great record. And again, nowadays you have critics galore saying, oh, yes, ABBA, I mean, absolutely fantastic writers. I mean, such, you know, back then they were getting, you know, slated left, right and centre. So, yeah, it was ABBA. And ABBA were, the thing that got me about ABBA was really they were a folk band, Swedish folk band. I mean, quite literally, that was their background. And you heard it throughout their career. They would have little melodic inflections the way Agneta and Anna-Frid sang. The backing vocals, it was truly unique. Mm-hmm. And that really touched me. And I still have a real thing for folk music. It's still a big part of what I listen to. Music of the land. Mm-hmm. And it's very rare when you get pop acts that have that as part of what they do. And they really did.
So what's your first single?
First single actually was now... This is cred now. My first single was Twofold Again. One was Cred, it was Looking Through the Windows by the Jackson Five.
Wow.
And that was an unusual one because it wasn't one of their bigger hits, but there was something about the song construction, here I am, the song construction that really got me. They have a kind of a middle section that happens twice, very unusual. It's absolutely uplifting, it's beautifully arranged, Michael's singing great, they're all singing great, and that kind of set me on the path. My brothers were very into R&B, and that set me on the path to R&B being a really integral part of my musical upbringing. But at the same time, when I went into the record store to pay my 45p, was it? I don't know.
If that, yeah.
I also bought Ernie the Fastest Milkman in the West by Benny Hill. And you know what? I know this is about music, but comedy is, I think, still, and certainly in the 70s, you know, when you had people like Monty Python and Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, yes. the two Ronnies, Morecambe Wise, you know, from Britain, it was so important from a mental health perspective, I think, to just be able to laugh for that time that you're with that comedian. So Ernie the Fastest Milkman in the West was pure joy to me. I loved it. I still do. I've got to very quickly tell you, quick story. During the Falklands conflict, all British media was banned in Argentina. All British TV shows, music, except the Benny Hill show. Because of popular demand, the Argentinian people refused to have Benny Hill taken off the air. So he was shown throughout that time. Isn't that amazing?
That is quite amazing, actually.
Yeah.
So one last question for me is, like, who would you like to collaborate with, either alive or dead, or who you wish you had collaborated with? Or it might be even someone that you have collaborated with already.
Like I say, I feel very, very honoured to have worked with Mike Rutherford. And if that's my, you know, collaboration with a big, big artist of this life, then I'm very happy with that. I've got to say, I would love to work with Genesis. Mm-hmm. I'd love to work with all three of them, because there ain't going to be a four or five of them anymore. Right. But if they ever did anything again, I think that would be absolutely wonderful. But I'll mention someone else, if I may. And because there's lots of people I'd love to collaborate with, the more I think about it. But there's a particular artist in Scotland called Doogie McLean. And Doogie McLean is a folk artist. He writes very much about the land, but also about the political situation in Scotland, which is not something that is personal to me very much. I'm not from there. It's their thing. But the fact that it's land and it's socially oriented, and he's got a beautiful voice, I would just like to do something with him at some point. Doogie. So Doogie, if you see this, we need to talk.
I shall have a look at Doogie and see what he's all about.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Is there a particular gig that you would like to go and see of somebody's that you haven't already seen?
Yeah, there is. I would love to see the Isley Brothers.
Wow.
And I know there's two of them still going. I think it's Ronald and Ernie. And I would see them. The Isleys, for me, were one of the most important bands of all time. I mean, talk about a band that technically was supposed to be an R&B band, and they weren't. They were genre fluid. Mm-hmm. And that was partly Ernie being, you know, one of the greatest rock guitarists of all time. Mm-hmm. It was partly what they covered. They tended to cover songs that were not R&B songs. Mm-hmm. They treated them with great respect, but their own material was sometimes sassy, sometimes fun, oftentimes socially confronting. I'm thinking about Harvest for the World in particular, one of the greatest songs ever written, as far as I'm concerned. And yet they were also so gregarious in terms of how they dressed, and as a lot of the soul bands did back then. So I would love to see the Isleys, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. That really was the last question from me. Okay. I'm going to pass you to Anthony.
If I'm looking confused, it's because we're changing the running order here as we go. But
oh, okay.
So, Clark, we now get to, I think, what's a very, very difficult question to answer. Certainly I would have a hard job answering this question. We all probably have one album that we just keep going back to and keep going back to. So we're kind of, one evening, what should I put on, what should I put on? Don't really know what to play. Oh, I'll put that one on. If you had to pick one album, which one would it be? Which would be your favourite album?
It is such an impossible question to answer because, you know, we all start going through the albums that actually they all share of equal importance to us.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this as I was driving over here, that if there was one album, I think it would... OK, I'm going to tell you what it's between.
OK.
It's between Tapestry, Carole King,
mm-hmm.
Inner Vision, Stevie Wonder, or Nothing Like the Sun, Sting. And I have to say, I think it would be Sting. And the reason I say that is that, firstly, I think Sting has earned the reputation that he should have. He's an amazing writer. Mike Nocito, my colleague in Johnny Hayes Jazz, worked with Sting in when he was in the Police and said he's just a fantastic singer as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not someone that does vocal, you know, acrobatics, just a great sounding voice. And I think that Nothing Like the Sun is so full of social and personal commentary that it ticks so many boxes for me. It's musically interesting. It obviously verges on jazz rock at times. But the fact that it contains Fragile as a song makes it up there with Inner Visions or Tapestry and many other albums. That song is so meaningful, I think, to a lot of people. It's I don't know if he would say this, because Every Breath You Take, which is not a song I particularly like, is the one that tends to get mentioned the most. But Fragile, in terms of reflecting the human condition for the brief time we're here on Earth, is so profound. And I recently saw a clip of Fragile performed by Stevie Wonder and Sting on stage, which is mind-blowing, mm-hmm. That I think Nothing Like the Sun would be the album that I would go back to and back to and back to, and I do.
Yeah, I mean, talking of Sting, I think for me the personal track is Fields of Gold, but partly because it reminds me of a moment in time. A very sad moment. It was during the period my mother was dying, and I couldn't listen to it for about 5 to 10 years after that. But as I've got beyond that period, when I do listen to it, I remember in a more positive and fond way. So for me, we were talking earlier about, you know, songs, you tend to remember where you were and what they meant to you. So for me, that's a personal experience. But moving on from kind of favourite album, which I agree with you is almost impossible. We were talking earlier about CDs and vinyl and the fact that the artwork is one of the things that you look forward to when you were buying a vinyl, and particularly getting very excited if it was a gatefold album, you could open it up. Favourite album cover, if you had to pick one, would be what?
Tears for Fears, Seeds of Love.
Ah, okay.
And I know the people who were involved in making that cover. And of course it was inspired by Sgt. Pepper's, you know, it was this very Beatlesque album, yes, in general. Yeah. But I think Tears for Fears are, again, and have proved themselves to be an important band, not mm-hmm. just a successful band, but I think they're important in terms of what they've written about, sung about. And Seeds of Love was very much needed when it came out. And I think that there was... I love the fact that they were referring to a subject matter, how love is so needed in the world.
Yes.
Which is traditionally in some way something you associate with the 60s, you know, a sense of global love needing to be more and more present. And so they reflected that in terms of the styling of the cover. And I love the fact that it was really not so much about them. Mm-hmm. It was the power of the image that was important. You know, it was colourful. They were drenched in paint. There was sun and moon above them. All of these things reflecting lyrics on the album. And I just loved the fact that it brought so many elements together, a sense of the 60s, but it was the album was made in the time that it was made, and it sounded fantastic as well. So you can't help be influenced by how you look at the cover, by how the album sounds. But, they did good, those lads, with Seeds of Love.
They did indeed, and of course still making new music.
So, yeah.
So we come to the last two questions, which bring us back to the topic of mental health, which is kind of where we started off. As a vinyl charity, one of the things that we try to do is we try to connect people with music in many different ways. And we came up with this idea, we've called it a virtual vinyl vault. And we thought, when we were speaking to musicians, we thought it'd be really good to ask them, thinking about people in the context of mental health and promoting good mental health, what albums would you particularly think of, whether it's in the context of people wanting moments of quiet reflection, escapism, or whatever it might be, which three albums would come to mind for you?
Well, I must admit, I possibly put my foot in it earlier because I probably mentioned them, but because I said I'm song-oriented, I tend to go to albums that have specific songs that resonate for me. So the first one would be Tapestry, Carole King. And I think the most important song from a mental health perspective on that album, although I would say that many of them are, is You've Got a Friend.
Yes.
And in some ways it's an obvious choice, but I know when I first heard it, and I heard James Taylor version first, which Carole King sang backing vocals on, I needed to hear that song. I was a fairly lonely young lad and solitary, and it was really the first time that I'd heard a musician articulate to me that you're not alone, because I'm getting emotional now, because I'm there. Me, the musician, is there for you. I understand what you're going through.
Yes.
And that is the job of the artist, to say, I understand you because I'm going through it myself.
Yeah.
So you're not alone. And You've Got a Friend, like I say, I mean, there's all kinds of songs on Tapestry, but she wrote a song that is way beyond her as a fantastic songwriter, one of the greatest ever songwriters of all time. So Tapestry has to be there for that one song.
Yes.
But apart from that, listen to the whole album, because it's all meaningful.
And then your second would be?
What? Second album will be Inner Vision, Stevie Wonder. And it's really hard with Stevie, because I think Stevie is God. I don't think he's a God. I think he's God. And I don't believe in God, so that's saying something. Stevie Wonder is unbelievably important as a musical tour de force. And it's really hard with his albums to pick one over the other because, you know, is it Music of My Mind? Is it Fulfilling as His First Finale, which it could have been? You know, Songs in the Key of Life and on. But Inner Visions has Higher Ground on it. And Higher Ground was also a song that I needed to hear as a young fella because it was really about struggle. That, you know, Stevie Wonder is talking about it in terms of struggles, life after life, the idea of reincarnation. And, you know, he's talking about what he did in his previous life, whether you believe in this or not. Of course, I'm just explaining his perspective in the song. What he did in his previous life was not positive, and it was what he wanted to do this time was to reach higher and higher for his higher ground. And it was this sense of you got to keep trying. It's not going to happen all by itself. It's going to take work to become that better version of yourself. And it's matched with a great energy of a track. I mean, Steve is there playing drums as well, and he's a phenomenal drummer. He's phenomenal at everything. And so that album, like I said, all the tracks, every single one is meaningful, but Inner Visions, because of Higher Ground, has to be in there for me.
And then Bringing Up the Rear, album number three would be what?
Album number three will be Nothing Like the Sun by Sting. And there are several songs on there that are really poignant to me. Fragile is the one that really touches me the most because we're in a time now, especially where songs tend to big up the artist who's singing them. I'm this and I'm Superman and I'm that. And I kind of understand the message is, you know, I will not be beaten, I will be victorious. Yeah, and there is something positive about that if you are not feeling that way. But sometimes it's good to hear someone say, we're all fragile. None of us are superhuman. And we can all own the fact that we have those moments when we wish we were stronger, we aren't, and we can get stronger.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's okay to just say, I don't feel okay. And that's what Fragile is all about to me. I think the other powerful thing about Nothing Like the Sun is, for example, They Dance Alone on that album.
That is a beautiful, beautiful song.
A beautiful song and very painful. You know, Sting talking about the mothers who dance with the photographs of their sons who were killed under the Pinochet regime in Chile. And in some ways, that mirror of saying, I've got my troubles and these are other people's. This is other people's pain.
Yeah.
And that's important for me to acknowledge because that's enormous.
So we were talking earlier about music, when you bring powerful lyrics and powerful music together and they dance in harmony and they make something much more than the sum of the parts. And I think that song is a very classic example of that. The guitar chords right at the very beginning, you know it's going a really painful, sad song, and the gentleness and the subtlety of very, very powerful lyrics. It's a real moment of genius, I think.
I think it also reflects him well as a singer because he obviously feels it. And he's not just going through the motions of professional recording artist. I agree. It transcends whatever was on his mind. It's a beautiful thing.
So the final question and your final answer. We've talked about other artists in the context of mental health. We now come to your extensive catalogue, both as a solo artist and as Johnny Hates Jazz. Thinking about our charity, Make a Difference with Records, which of your albums do you think will be most appropriate in the context of that charity, and which one would you want to donate to Make a Difference with Records?
The album that I'd like to donate is a solo album of mine called Tomorrow, which we spoke about earlier, came out in 2007. And Tomorrow is a very personal album to me. It's environmentally oriented, but also oriented towards the questions I was asking myself about the direction of my life. I mentioned earlier a song called The Road Not Taken, which is on that album, which is about me looking at the regrets that I have and had in my life and trying to heal them. And I did find healing, and I have been able to move on. But it's a very poignant song, I think, for anyone who's finding it difficult to move on from the past and get fully present. Likewise, there's a song on there, the title track, Tomorrow, which is actually ostensibly about what we're doing to the planet. But it's, as you can tell by the title, it's there is a sense of hope,
yes,
to it. And I think the fact that people can be encouraged to look ahead and say, things will get better, and they will. It's the natural course of life, that things do get better. It's one of the wonderful things I find about aging, is that I am much happier in myself now than I was when I was younger. I didn't much like being a teenager. I really dig being the age I'm at now, because I'm a better version of myself. Because we've had all our experiences, we've had our ups and downs, we've had our challenges. And Tomorrow, in some ways, is reflecting that fact that there is still a lot to look forward to, no matter what age you are. So I think Tomorrow is the album for you, and I'd be very honoured if you would accept that album in your store.
We would be delighted to accept it, and on behalf of Nadine and myself, I wanted to thank you so much for the generosity of your time today, but also being so insightful with all your comments. It really does mean a lot to us that artists like you support the charity. So thank you very much, Clark.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Nadine.
Thank you.
Follow us on Instagram under Make a Difference with Records, where you can also find updates on new stock and future podcasts. The Creative Well can also be found on Instagram and at thecreativewell.com.